welcome to another episode of A Little Ray of Sunshine, inspirational stories from everyday people. Tonight, I'll be calling a man by the name of Gary Keith. Gary comes to us from Raleigh, North Carolina. Gary has a very interesting story to share, and this will be part one. Next week, tune in for part two to hear the full story. Let's go ahead and get him on the line.
Good evening, Grover.
Well, how are you, Gary?
I'm fantastic. How about you this evening?
Oh, doing really good. Thank you.
Good.
Thanks for being willing to be on the podcast tonight.
Oh, you're so welcome. I'm excited about doing so. And I heard what you've done before with others. And I said, you know what? I think I might fit right in with that. So I'm glad we're able to make the connection.
That's great. Well, you know, you and I had a visit briefly the other day, and I was really interested in hearing about your story, because from what you shared, it sounds like you've got some experiences that I think other people could really learn from. What do you think?
I've shared this with many people through the years, and you know how you have stories and examples and life experiences, and people say to you, you know, you should write a book about that. You should write a book about that. And you know, it's easier said than done, but I took them up on that and actually did it. So now I'm trying to share that message.
Well, Gary, what actually is the name of the book that you wrote?
It's called Overcoming. Mm-hmm. And the rest of it is A Childhood of Abuse and Dysfunctional Living, How I Did It. Mm-hmm. And it can be found on Amazon.
So this book you wrote about your own personal experiences while growing up, correct?
Absolutely right. So the first half is my biography and the last half is how I did it, and advice and thoughts on how others can overcome similar or the same things.
Oh, that's very good. I'll let you just kind of start where you would like to, and we'll just kind of go from there and see where this takes us tonight.
Well, that's fantastic. Thanks so much.
You bet.
First and foremost, I just want to thank you for the opportunity once again to be a part of your podcast, and also to share a few things with your listeners and hope positive, you know, impact upon their life. A couple things I will say before I start sharing my story. When I do share, it is not designed to try to create any type of, you know, emotional, like I feel for this guy, or insincereness or things of that nature,
right,
or try to garner sympathy. It's designed really to share my story in hopes that someone might pick it up and say, you know what, I can relate to that. I like his ideas, and perhaps I can find that hope and that belief he's talking about. Secondly, I would say, you know, the folks that had this impact upon me in my life, and a lot of it was negative in my childhood, I do want to say that there's no feelings of animosity. There's no feelings of hatred. There's no feelings of where I want to belittle them in any way whatsoever. That's not the point of the story. The story is what it is. The life I lived is what it is. But I've met with many of those folks through the years and made amends and told them I love them and I forgave them. And there's no harboring of ill will. And so, yeah, so that's not the purpose of this message, is to beat up on people.
The message is to help other people that might be experiencing something similar.
No question.
Okay.
That's absolutely what it is.
Okay.
But the first part won't seem like that. It's going to seem like, boy, this guy sure went through a lot. So I always put that disclaimer in the front.
Okay.
So with that in mind, always lead off all my, before I tell my story, of saying my favorite quote, which is, you know, life is not a matter of holding good cards, but of playing a poor hand very well. Robert Louis Stevenson said that, and I latched onto that years ago. And as you will hear from my story, life dealt me a pretty bad hand. And it was either my job to take and fold, or I could play it out for a winning hand. Mm-hmm. And through the grace of God and some few good choices I made, I was able to parlay it into a winning hand. And so hopefully others who may be feeling down and out or distraught can piggyback on that, and it can give them some courage and faith to move forward.
Fantastic.
So I started out in a little town called Gaffney, South Carolina in the 1960s. And you know what? I don't know if I had a choice in life of who I was, my birth parents were supposed to be, but either way, they were who they were. They were alcoholics, and that happens to kids. You're put in place to, where either God feels you need to be at that time, or for them, or for you, or whomever, and they struggled with children. They drank like a fish and smoked like a chimney. And most of the time they were out living the life and partying and bars. And I'm just a small kid and I'm typically home by myself, probably around about the age of 5 years old, trying to take care of my little brother who's one. And struggled with that a lot as a young boy because just the nightmares, the anxiety, scared, feared, didn't know who was going to come into our home while my parents were gone. And so it was really, really a rough first 5 years or so. Spankings were daily. I had a really bad problem with enuresis, aka bedwetter. And so that even added more pressure, stress, and beatings and yellings and screamings. And so my nerves were at wit's end. Had no self-confidence as a child. I was skinny as a rail. If you look at the pictures of the Ethiopian children they show on TV sometime, and you looked at me, we looked very similar. And so the point came where these folks realized that they couldn't handle children. And another tragic day happened, which is they decided to give me and my brother up for adoption. And I'm around 5 to 6 years of age. He's in that 1 to 2 range. And we had a brother in between us, but my mother owed somebody a debt. I come to find out later on. And she gave him away when he was an infant.
To pay for the debt?
To pay for the debt. So I would never know him until I got to be an adult. And I went and found him later. So I'm here as a six-year-old boy, just trying to figure out what I'm going to do. And I don't know anything in life. And I'm going from foster home to foster home, still struggling with anxiety, still struggling with fear, still struggling with the enuresis and spankings every day. Just, it was really getting bad and bad on my self-esteem. So finally, some family decided to adopt us. And it's one of the happiest days of my life. I think as a child, all you can want is someone to love you and appreciate you and care for you. Other than that, as long as you got a meal or two, I think you're pretty happy. I hadn't seen any consistency in that in my first 5 to 6 years. As I said, I hadn't probably been to a doctor probably since I was an infant, and this family who adopted me finally took me to a doctor. They said, that boy's malnourished. He says, looks like he hasn't eaten in a while. I finally said to them, well, my best friend for my first 5 years was peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and that was about it.
Right.
It's probably kept me alive. And so this family adopted me. They happened to be an LDS family. They were not very active into the church. It was another small town with a small branch in the area. And but they had 2 girls on this farm they were running. And the mom kept having miscarriages, and they wanted a boy. They wanted a boy on this farm to help them out. There was only one problem. They wanted only one boy, as far as adoption was concerned.
Yeah.
So my first sales job as a six-year-old kid was convincing them, don't separate me from my brother. That was tough.
Yeah.
I remember standing there as a kid, begging and pleading them to take both of us. He was all I had in life.
Right.
Yeah, I had nothing else. I just had the clothes on my back and my brother. And so they consulted and talked back and forth, and through the grace and mercy of God, they decided to adopt 2 boys instead of one. They kept us together, which is highly unusual. Typically, they send adopted children that are multiples in different directions of the country or the world, but they took both of us. So we came to this home, and well, I'm just as happy as you can imagine. I'm just ecstatic. I finally got a place to lay my head at night. I finally have pretty decent food to eat. And all seemed to be going pretty well in life. I mean, I was happy. We went to church occasionally, not that much. My dad, he struggled with some word of wisdom issues, my adopted dad.
Mm-hmm.
My mom did too, but I didn't know what that meant. I just needed food and a little bit of love and a place to lay my head. They got the bright idea that they wanted to move on to bigger and better things in that farm life. And they decided they were going to build a new house. And I was pretty excited about that. Whatever was good for them was good for me.
All right.
Right. So, but a part of this house would be they would open up a grocery store that would also include a bar, a pool hall, and all the things that go along with that. I'm 9 years old at this time. I don't know what that means. Whatever you folks are doing, I'm doing. I was obedient to a fault. I was scared I'd be sent back to the adoption agency again. Whatever they told me to do was yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, yes, sir, no, sir. I mean, not to be gross or anything, but we raised chickens and cows and pigs, and we raised everything. And my mom one day says, Gary, get out there in that yard and pick up all the chicken poop out of the yard, and let's get into this basket. I went out there by hands and picked it all up. Whatever she said, do, I did.
You did, yeah.
It didn't matter. I was a hardworking boy because out of fear probably was some of it, but I think it was part of my nature as well. And so they built this place, new house. I didn't know the ramifications of having a bar with alcohol, with pool tables and jukeboxes and pinball machines and a grocery store and selling all those things. I had no clue.
Yeah.
I'm just a kid trying to figure out himself in life. I'm still trying to quit wetting the bed at 9 years old. I'm still trying to figure out where my confidence is and my self-esteem that's in the toilet. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to figure out these two new sisters that I have that have embraced me and treated me like their own. I'm trying to be obedient to every word. And these folks were harsh. People who raised kids back in the 60s and 70s were. And they believed in the hand, the belt, the stick, whatever. Mm-hmm. That's how you were raised. And so, trust me, I got my fair share. But we were only there for about 3 months in this new place. My adopted dad was still working a full-time job, just trying to keep the lights on while the business was getting up and running. My mom was running the store, bar, pool hall, all these things. He came home one day from work. We kids were in the house part just playing. He comes in and throws his lunchbox on the bar in the kitchen. He looks into the pool hall and he notices his wife was dancing with someone. He got really irate. Once again, I'm nervous as a ladybug in a chicken coop. I'm just like fearful of everything. Next thing we know, he runs and grabs a pistol out of the cabinet. And my sister, who was much bigger than me and strong for her age, more like a boy than a girl, she wrestles with him with a gun. He ends up breaking away from her with that. There he shoots himself. He takes his own life.
Right there
in front of his family.
Right in front of the family.
Yes. I'm telling you, my world stopped, Grover. I don't know if I became paralyzed mentally or all of a sudden my world just collapsed. I don't know if I was having a nervous breakdown, but I couldn't see. I couldn't hear for a few minutes. I said to myself, am I the cause of all of this? Where am I going to go now? What's going to happen now? Does anyone love me, care for me? What's going to happen to me and my brother?
Right.
So I'm just torn. I cannot believe this happened. I'm just trying to get my feet up under me, and he takes his life.
Wow.
I know. I've gone through now two fathers. Gone through foster care dads. I've gone through adoption. Now I've gone through a suicide. And I'm not sure if I can really handle this life.
Sure.
All right.
Yeah, that young of an age, I don't know how you managed. Right.
Exactly. So my mom took it really badly. Not only personally, but she looked at it as if everybody was blaming her. And she immediately changed. She was always a tough woman, but she became really tough. She had that Medusa stare, that anger. Mm-hmm. And she became extremely temperamental. partly because I think once again she thought everybody blamed her, but also now she became the chief cook and bottle washer. She's got four kids now. She's got to try to take care of this, still ran a farm on the side, try to feed kids. I mean, so she really felt the pressure and the pains of it. I seemed to get to the brunt of it because I was the oldest boy. Mm-hmm. For some reason, the beatings, the insults, the emotional abuse, the psychological abuse, the beating me down mentally and physically became almost paralyzing. And my two sisters, who were a little older than me, they didn't stay there long. They dropped out of high school. They got married early, 17, 16, 15. So I'm the one that's the last child, really, if you will, or the head child. My brother was still there. So I felt that brunt, that weight of everything. She also started blaming the church. I don't know anything about this. Oh, there are a bunch of hypocrites down there. We're not going down there. I didn't know what that meant. We're not going back. Okay. Those people are laughing, making fun, mocking, saying it's my fault. Okay. Once again, I'm about 10 years old now.
Yeah.
Whatever mom says, I do. So to help me, as I said before, I became an extremely hard worker. I worked in the fields. That's what I did. And I made my money working in the fields. And I became such a great worker that I also became a great saver. So I saved money a lot. I worked hard. I tried to bury myself into work just to get away from her angriness, her temperamentalness, and just get out of the house when I could. We didn't have any religion in our home at the time. We just lived in a bar, a smoke-filled bar. The pool hall drunks, those were my idols, if you will. Men getting drunk, not even making it home, couldn't make it home, spent all their paycheck, couldn't even drive home, would walk them out the door and lay them in the ditch. This is what part of my life is at this point. I know nothing any different. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know there was an outside world outside of this. So I can see how people could get trapped in their environment sometimes and how we could all become a product of our environment sometimes.
Right. I like that you said product of the environment, not a victim. And it sounds like to me that you took on that role of this is the way it is. This is how it is in my life right now. But I don't think you became a victim, did you?
I don't recall ever feeling that way.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have any goals or dreams, or I couldn't see the forest for the trees. I couldn't see the future. I didn't know what I didn't know.
Right.
All I knew is I knew how to work and I knew how to save money. And I set a goal as a young boy. I said, you know what? I'm going to save money to buy my own car one day.
There you go.
And that's what I was, right? That's what I was saving it for. I don't know why. Nobody else did. I mean, in my community, everybody dropped out of high school. No one graduated high school where I lived. Mm-hmm. No one had any college where I lived. Everybody was really very uneducated. Everybody worked at the mill, or they were blue collar. That's what they did for a living. And they got married or didn't get married or had kids out of wedlock, or they became addicts or alcoholics or drug addicts or whatever. And that's the people I surrounded my life with. And you know, you have to be careful who you hang out with in life because you'll become like that.
Sure.
So, I mean, I'm just plugging along, and when I turn about 12, See, I think everybody has somebody who comes into their life at certain points in their life.
Thank goodness.
I truly believe it, right?
Yeah.
I think God plants certain people. Now, sometimes we bypass them. Sometimes we ignore them. Sometimes we push them away. But I truly believe it. I've seen it too many times in my life now. I didn't know it at the time. He sent somebody. He says, I got a boy. His name is Gary. He's been through a tough life. I'm going to send someone down, an angel, if you will, to see if I can help, not force him, not push him, but see if I can help rescue him. It was a branch president who just been newly called, didn't know anybody. Thank goodness. He didn't know my mother's antics. He didn't know her background, her history. He didn't know who she was. He walks in, wants to introduce himself. And for those who don't know what a branch president is, it's like a pastor of a church. And he walks in, and he's doing his niceties and greetings, and my mother's just giving him the cold shoulder. We're all standing there, me and my sisters and brother. He invites my mother to church. He says, no, I'm not coming. I'm not stepping foot in that place. My sisters, he looked at them, and they said, no, we're just going to follow what Mama says. Grover, he looks at me, and I'm a skinny 12-year-old kid who's so afraid of his mother that he can barely stand to look at her because he's so afraid of her. All she has to do is give him a look, and she can cut him right in two. He says, how about you, young man? Would you like to come? I swallowed, and in my pubescent voice, as my voice was cracking, I says, yes, sir, as long as you'll have me back home in time to watch football on TV in the afternoon. I didn't know what I didn't know. All I knew is I loved watching football as a kid.
Yeah.
Now, I thought my mother was going to veto this and say, absolutely not. He's not going anywhere without me. She didn't. It was almost as if her tongue was bound. This woman has something to say to everybody about everything. And she didn't say a word.
Wow.
I'm standing there trembling in my shoes. He says, I'll tell you what, you be ready next Sunday at 8:30. I'll swing by and pick you up.
This concludes part one of Gary Keith's life story. Please tune in next week, March 15th, for the second half. And as always, to my listeners, remember to speak up, speak out, and speak often. Bye-bye.